Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
So for you, when does life start? When does a human being become a human being?
This is a question that I think will be debated through the centuries, and people come down to very different points of view.
But for you, what's that point?
It is not something that I feel like is really part of this conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, we work with women. I guess the way I'd really like to I think every woman has to make her own decision. What we do at Planned Parenthood is make sure that women have all their options for health care, mm-hmm. and that they have the option to have a healthy pregnancy. They have an option to put a child up for adoption if they decide to carry a pregnancy to term, or they have the right to make a decision to terminate a pregnancy.
But why would it be so controversial for you to say, when do you think life starts?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's controversial. I don't mm-hmm. know that it's really relevant to the conversation. But I mean, okay. For me, I'm a mother of three children. Mm-hmm. For me, life began when I delivered them. They were part of. They've been probably the most important thing in my life ever since. Mm-hmm. But that was my own personal. That's my own personal decision.
That's an excerpt from an interview yesterday with the president of Planned Parenthood, Cecile Richards, on Fusion TV's America with Jorge Ramos. Now, you heard her say there that, number one, the question of when life begins is irrelevant to any question, any conversation she wants to have. She is the president of the largest abortion provider in the United States, and she also believes that her own children's lives began when she delivered them. That is an odd medical view, if you ask me. Joining us to talk about the president of Planned Parenthood's answer to the question, when does life begin? Scott Klusendorf, president of Life Training Institute, author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. Scott, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good afternoon, Todd.
What's your initial reaction? I know you listen very carefully to these kind of things, and you deal with these kinds of evasions all the time. What's your first reaction to Cecile Richards' answer to the question, when does life begin?
Well, if life begins when we decide it does, why not after birth? Couldn't she have just decided her kids begin to live and have value at age two rather than at birth? If it is birth, as she indicates it is, actually she was more precise. She said they are alive and have value. Life begins for me in terms of my kids when they were delivered. Well, that's purely subjective, but I think it's important we know, Todd, that this is part of a strategy that has been part of the pro-abortion movement for going on 40 years now. I'm going to quote you just briefly something that appeared in California Medicine, the medical journal of the California Medical Association, in 1970. And this editorial was talking about how the culture would be changed to accept abortion on demand. And the editors say this: since the old ethic has not yet been fully displaced, it has been necessary to separate the idea of abortion from the idea of killing, which continues to be socially abhorrent. The result has been a curious avoidance of the scientific fact, which everyone knows, that human life begins at conception and is continuous, whether intra or extrauterine, until death. And they go on to say in this editorial that it's going to take unbelievable, considerable semantic gymnastics in order to pull off confusing the public on the question of when life begins. So this is part of a strategy. It's nothing new. Abortion choice advocates have been talking this way for a very long time.
So in other words, the reason that they so carefully, so consistently avoid that question is they know that the answer, the real answer, completely exposes what abortion is all about.
Exactly right. Look, the question, what kind of thing is the unborn, is not a philosophical question. It's not a subjective question. It's an empirical question. And we don't go to our own feelings. We don't go to our own experience. We go to the science of embryology, which tells us that from the earliest stages of development, the unborn are distinct, living, and whole human beings. What you see the president of Planned Parenthood doing here is confusing the empirical question, what is the unborn and when does life begin, with her own philosophical worldview, which is how she feels about this new entity. And this is very common in a relativistic culture where people take the scientific and objective question and exchange it for a subjective one. Now, I find this very odd. In fact, a guy on my staff, Clinton Wilcox, made a great observation today. If you were to ask the president of Planned Parenthood, does science matter and is it relevant if I claim to you the Earth is only 6,000 years old? She would say, that's crazy. Science disproves that silly creationist view. That's nuts. But if you ask her for science when it comes to the unborn, she'll say that science is irrelevant and it doesn't matter. So what we have is another case of the left choosing science when it suits them and ignoring it when it doesn't.
Scott Kluzendorf is our guest. We'll take a break, and when we come back on this Friday afternoon, February the 28th, we'll have another 10 minutes with him talking about the president of Planned Parenthood's answer to the question. It wasn't an answer. It was an evasion. When does life begin? I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Does God work through children to help others? Do children have a vocation? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is How Can I Help? God's Calling for Kids. It's a great book for children ages 4 through 8 and only costs $7.99. How Can I Help? Is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can check out How Can I Help? God's Calling for Children at issuesetc.org.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Emmanuel Lutheran, Alexandria, Virginia. Bethel Lutheran, Ballinger, Texas. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas. Beautiful Savior Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri. Christ Our King Community Lutheran, Costa Mesa, California. Lord of Life Lutheran, Plano, Texas. Christ Lutheran, Platte Woods, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Sonora, Texas. Faith Lutheran, Azona, Texas. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Steger, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Scott Kluzendorf is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Scott is president of Life Training Institute. He is author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. How long can this kind of refusal to answer the question? It used to be, I think, that when they sat down for interviews, people like Cecile Richards with the media, they wouldn't come out and say, when does life begin? But it seems to me that reporters have kind of caught on to the fact that they don't want to answer the question, which usually gets reporters asking that question. How much longer can you hold out on that question in your viewpoint, Scott?
Well, when they're pressed that way, they look really bad. And if you watch this interview, as you and I both have, she looks really, really bad. When the debate is framed around the question, what kind of thing is the unborn, the other side loses every single time. And it's not just us who are pressing the question. Abortionists themselves are admitting what's going on. For example, Warren Hearn, who wrote the book Abortion Practice, which is the medical teaching text that teaches doctors how to perform abortions, said in a medical piece in 1978, referring to D&E abortion, meaning dismemberment abortion, he says this: "We have reached a point in this particular technology," meaning dilation and evacuation abortion, "where there is no possibility of denials of an act of destruction by the operator. It is before one's eyes. The sensations of dismemberment flow through the forceps like an electric current. They know what they're killing. They know what they're doing. They're trying to pull the wool over the eyes, but I think it's falling apart on them. And if we keep pressing this point, they're going to begin to look more and more like they're covering something up." And, you know, the funny thing is, Todd, when people sense you're covering something up, it's like sharks circling an overturned boat. They sense there's blood in the water, and if we can create this sensation that the other side is covering something up here, it becomes tougher for them to continue.
One of the things she said in that interview was, while she was deflecting, she said, look, we just, at Planned Parenthood, we really just want women to be able to make this decision. And so when they come into Planned Parenthood, we do our best to see to it that if they want to carry the baby, they can carry the baby. If they want to adopt the baby, they can adopt the baby. And if they want to have their right to an abortion, she said, terminate the pregnancy. It's often odd how they don't use the word abortion. They can do that, too. Is that a fair picture of Planned Parenthood behind closed doors?
Well, if you look at their budget and look at what their primary activity is, it's not health care. It's making quite a bit of money off abortions. For example, they tried to make themselves look like they were in the business of providing mammograms for women to prevent cancer. Well, it turned out they're really not doing those. That was smoke and mirrors. Look, Planned Parenthood does not make money from women not having abortions. They make money selling abortions. They're not in the business, really, of helping women who choose not to go through with a pregnancy or choose not to go through with an abortion. If a woman shows up at Planned Parenthood and says, "I don't have any money, and I'm going to keep my baby, and I need you to provide for me housing, and I need you to provide for me clothing," Planned Parenthood's going to turn her away or refer her to a pro-life pregnancy center. We've got stories of pregnancy centers taking clients on referral from Planned Parenthood who didn't want to provide this woman with the help she needed. So this idea that they're really pro-choice, I think we can challenge it a little bit.
Scott, we have been trying for several months now to schedule an interview with a representative from NARAL Pro-Choice America, one of the leading advocates of abortion in America. We have made numerous phone calls and emails to NARAL's media department. No response to our interview request. Now, Jeff told me today, maybe I shouldn't have told them that the interview topic would be, when does life begin? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, in fact, your experience there has been documented in a book that has been written by John Shields called The Democratic Virtues of the Christian Right, where he surveys pro-life groups and pro-abortion groups and tries to determine which side has been more enthusiastic about intellectually engaging the issue. And he comes to the conclusion that while pro-life groups have been very serious and very aggressive at studying the issue, articulating their views, the other side, by and large, has not wanted to do that. Now, I don't claim for a moment that there is no one on the other side willing to debate this issue. There are. And there are people who have written books. But at the activist level, the street level, the Planned Parenthood level, the NARAL level, what you're going to find is an attitude that even showing up to debate us is somehow not even worthy of their presence, and that they somehow legitimize our side by even showing up to debate. I had one pro-abortion activist in Canada, Joyce Arthur, who declined to debate me after a student group up there tried to arrange the debate at the University of British Columbia. And her response was, "Why would I show up to debate someone who is anti-choice? Would a Jew debate a Nazi?" I mean, that was her response. The idea that if she even shows up, she's legitimizing our view. Well, I think that's hurting their side, because over time, people notice that you're unwilling to defend your views.
If they admit, now there are some who do, generally they're cloistered away, academicians someplace writing papers where they admit these things, or they're someplace in Northern Europe where they freely admit these things. If they admit that life begins at conception, but in essence say, so what, a woman's decision trumps the life in her womb, what happens then?
Well, there are abortion choice advocates who make that claim. You've got people who say, look, the woman's bodily autonomy is absolute. It trumps everything else. Therefore, even if the unborn are human, and even if they do have a right to life, the mother can withdraw that consent if she wants, and she can exercise her right to bodily autonomy. There are those who argue that way. It's not necessarily a street-level argument, but it is something you'll hear on university campuses and other places. The problem, of course, with that argument is, if the woman's right to bodily autonomy is absolute, what if a woman decides to take drugs during the time she is pregnant that would cause her fetus to be deformed? Would we say that's wrong? What if she wants a deformed fetus? If bodily autonomy trumps everything else, I'm not sure how we can say to her, no, you can't do that. That would be wrong. Well, her autonomy, she wanted to do that. That would be the end of the argument as far as I see it. So there are some real counterintuitive notions that go with this bodily autonomy idea that I think make that view untenable.
I remember it was several years ago, General Wesley Clark was attempting to make a kind of a pitch for a position on a presidential ticket. He was asked the question, when does life begin? His answer was stunningly honest, although horrifying. He said, life begins with a woman's decision. Is that, in effect, the position of Planned Parenthood?
Yeah, exactly. It mirrors it perfectly. We give value to life. We say, in fact, it's not even that she's saying we value life when we decide it. She's going so far as to say it begins when I decide. And that is just scientifically ridiculous. It's unbelievable. It's worse than saying the earth is flat. And yet they say this all the time. And that's all they can do. Listen, in a relativistic culture where we decide that my self-sovereignty rules everything, and everything else you can just forget, what we're left with is might makes right. And you have a right to life if I choose to accept it. Now, what's going to happen if we have a future government, let's say 100 years from now, when we're long gone and we're pushing up daisies, there's a new government that comes in that decides women don't have a right to life and decides they're physically inferior to men, and therefore they have rights only if their husbands choose to recognize them. Now, Ms. Richards can say all she wants about that's ridiculous, but the moral logic that would be in play is identical to what she said about her own kids. She was very clear. Her kids had a right to life when she decided it. That's scary stuff.
Before we let you go, what can we learn from that brief interchange in yesterday's interview with the president of Planned Parenthood? How would you, in a paragraph or so, write the lesson we ought to learn there with about a minute?
The lesson here is this. The Christian worldview is so much better at explaining human dignity and human equality. We argue that each and every human being has an equal right to life in virtue of the kind of thing they are. They're human beings with a particular nature. The other view, the competing view, is that you have value only if the strong and big people say you do, and you only have it when they say you do. Which view is going to do the better job accounting for dignity of the individual, moral rules that govern how we treat one another? I think the Christian worldview does, hands down. And that's one of the beauties that we can explain to people, that if you truly value human equality and truly value the individual, well, the Christian worldview is going to do a better job accounting for that than the secular view that comes down to might makes right.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute, author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You can find out more about this book and Life Training Institute under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Scott, thanks for being our guest. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back in Hour 2 of Issues Etc., we're going to spend a few minutes with Aisha Kreitz talking about black women in New York City aborting more than half of their reported pregnancies in 2012. The numbers are stunning. There were 31,000 plus aborted children, only 24,000 plus children born alive to African-American women in the city of New York in 2012. That's shocking. That's horrifying. We'll talk about that with Aisha Kreitz, president of the Frederick Douglass Foundation. Edie Wadsworth will join us after that. We'll discuss the dignity of every Christian vocation. And then we're going to play Issues Etc., soundbite of the week. That's the last half hour of Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon, February the 28th. I'm Todd Wilkin, Hour 2 in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler? Would you like to learn more about teaching students the essentials of biblical interpretation, law and gospel, or worldviews from a Lutheran perspective? Come join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education, July 15th through the 17th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. For more information, visit ccle.org, ccle.org.